Hey, good morning, Reality Church. How are you guys feeling today? You doing all right? Yeah, me too. It's going to be a great day. It's going to be beautiful. I have a couple. First of all, I'm Lance Birch. I'm one of the pastors here at Reality. And if you are a first-time guest, so glad that you're here. I know you could be a lot of different places. And I also know that you've been greeted probably a few times on your way in. But just wanted to do that from up front. Also, those of you who are watching online, thank you so much for clicking on this. I hope you get something out of it today. I have a couple of announcements to kind of go through. Number one, Inside Out, which was our sermon series a few weeks back, and also a project initiative to buy this building and to build it out to expand our children's ministry and student ministry space, which we're super excited about. Our first offering for that is going to be April 10th. So if you filled out your card, if you haven't, do that and turn it in. Maybe you're turning that in today. But on April 10th, we're going to do a couple of things. We're going to vote on whether to purchase the building, and then we're going to take the offering to kind of build that out. So if there's also going to be probably, there is going to be a Q&A on that day for people who might be interested in having coming to a meeting about that. So also, I'm wearing a t-shirt today, which is Overflow Weekend t-shirt. It's an Overflow Weekend. Woo! Yeah. Listen, this is coming up in 3 weeks, I think, in 3 weeks, and this is a church-wide event. I know it's a student ministry event, but everyone here needs to either be praying for this or meeting a need. And if you don't know what the needs are, you can contact Travis or Jordy, but there's all kinds of needs for an event like this. You know, over 100 kids are going to be here. This is one of the events where they make significant decisions about the rest of their life when it comes to them and God. And so let's not only be in prayer for this, let's gather together and lock arms and say, this is what we're going to do. We're going to impact the next generation for Christ. So I'm excited about that coming up. Also today, if you're hungry, are any of you hungry? Actually, don't think about that right now. But at the end of the service, do think about it. There's a couple that I know. They're friends of mine, Eric and Ashley Nelson, and they've got a son, Easton, and they've decided to adopt. And we are big supporters of adoption here and big supporters of the idea. I don't know if you guys know this, but there are 140 million orphans in the world. If they were a country, they'd be like the sixth largest country in the world. And some people are called to adopt. Some people are called to pray for them. Some people are called to support them financially. But all of us need to be in on caring for orphans. That's just one of the things that Jesus told us to do. So today we are going to, at Culver's, just right over there, they are donating. Normally when you do this, like the restaurant will donate like 10%. Culver's today is donating 20% of the receipts, I think from noon to 2. So get over there early or, you know, a little bit later if you want to avoid the zoo. It's not going to be a zoo. It's going to be perfect. Anyway, don't think about Culver's from now on. In fact, just forget that, and we're going to move on. We are in a series called Everybody Wins. Everybody Wins, which is not just our series. 35 churches across the community of Omaha are doing this series called Everybody Wins. It's not just a sermon series. It is basically an effort from the churches in our community to unleash unprecedented compassion on our community. It's not just what we talk about in here. It's about what we do. Our church does Big Live. We've got other projects that we do, Bethlehem House, Taking It to the Streets, other things that we do. But it's to take our church and to get outside of these walls and to unleash unprecedented compassion. How cool is it that it's not just us, that 35 churches are doing this series and today are hearing this message? I just think that's the coolest thing ever, that we're all on the same page. So the church is an interesting thing. Everybody's got an opinion about the church, you know, especially the church in America. I think about this stuff all the time. I think you should. In fact, I ask people outside the church, what do you think of the church? What comes to your mind? And one of the things that I get more than anything else, especially if they're kind of antagonistic about the church, is the church is full of, and how do they finish that sentence? Hypocrites. The church is full of hypocrites. They're just fake and phony people. To which I often respond, well, so is Target, but you go there every week. So that's only if I'm feeling punchy. But it's true, because if what you need is there, you don't really care about who else is populating that place. If what I need is at this location, then I'll go there and I'll get what I need. And so let me be the first to admit the church is full of hypocrites, and I know one of them, okay? because at least some areas of my life, I hold a belief and I live a different way. You know, I hold a belief about how you should, you know, speak to other drivers while you're on the highway. And then I have my own behaviors, okay, that I wish that God could, you know, maybe, you know, just supernaturally just take from me. But I know that he's, you know, I'm going through a process of maturity. But every one of us in here is a hypocrite in some area. In other words, you hold a belief, this is the way things should be, and then the way you behave is a little bit different than that. So yeah, but we need to take this criticism really, really seriously, because I think it's a valid point. And I think what it actually does to people outside the church is it creates an environment where they say, I can't go in there. I can't go in there because those people are perfect. I mean, they got it all together. You know, these church people, they're really good at when they present their life to you, they just feel like, okay, their biggest problem is that they didn't have a long enough quiet time this morning. Their devotional time was only 30 minutes, you know, instead of an hour. And I can't even relate to that. And so people stay out of the church because they think that we've got it all together. They don't really open up about who they are because they think we've got it all together. In fact, I've got a poll question for you guys. And you can text in the answer to this. You can respond at that website. You could download our app, which some of you know exists or not. But that might take a little bit longer. But I feel safe to be authentic at church. I feel safe to be really who I am at church. And answer, yes, I do, or no, I don't. I feel safe when it comes to church that when I can just be real. I can just out with it. I can tell people exactly who I am, what I struggle with, what my sins are. I feel completely safe at church. Because we show up at church and we say things like, you know, we high-five each other and we say, how are you doing? And everybody, when they get that question answered, I'm fine. Everybody here is fine. It's a supernatural place of fineness. If you're out there in the lobby, how are you doing? Fine. I'm fine. I'm fine. Nobody even knows what that means. It's just, I'm fine. I'm doing great, you know, and every single one of us is this in here. Every single one of us is this. Listen, guys, we are the most overweight, indebted, medicated, depressed, anxious, addicted, incarcerated generation in American history. And every one of us is doing fine. That makes me wonder, you know, how does, like, it's a moving poll, isn't that cool? How does it feel to come into church? Because I've been in church for a long time. How does it feel to come into church for the first time? Because for some of you guys, this was the bravest thing you did all week. You walk in these doors. And it doesn't feel to many of us like it's a safe place to be. Every once in a while, you come across somebody who's not doing fine. You come across a spiritual giant who's doing blessed. Right? They're not doing fine. How are you? I'm blessed. And you have to say it that way. That's the way you have to say, I'm blessed. So, any more blessed? God's blessing my socks off. If I was any more blessed, I'd have to be twins. You know, that sort of thing. But that kind of makes me wonder if everybody's doing fine and everybody's blessed. What are we doing here? What got us up this morning? What drove us to church today? And on social media, forget fine. Everyone's doing awesome. I mean, they're just doing great. We put out the best version of ourselves on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter and all that. Everybody, and you know, if you get into social media, there's actually a diagnosis for this. If you get addicted to social media, you are so much more likely to be depressed. And why is that? It's because of the comparison game. We see everybody's highlight reel, and we know what our real life looks like. And so we see they're great. They take a picture of their great meal, and we're eating a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, and we go, oh, man, my life stinks. Or we see their picture of family day, and their whole family is just angelic, and they're smiling at the camera. It's just like, we're at day at the park, and we know what our life is like. But we didn't see the moments leading up to and directly after that smiling picture. It's like, you just smile for one picture. Would you just smile for one? You know, and then it's like, family day at the park. And that's what it looks like. But we know what the reality is. So this comparison game makes all of us feel like we don't know enough, we don't have enough, we're not smart enough. We're just plain old not enough. I'm not enough in comparison to everybody else. So when left with the choice of being not enough and being in a room full of people who are, instead of being real, we end up filtering our image. We end up filtering. See, the church was doing the filter thing long before Instagram. We filter out in life groups or at church in the lobby or in our Bible studies. We filter out everything that might reveal a blemish or a scar or a sin or anything that might make us look less than. Because it makes us feel like, you know, in church world, I'm just not enough. I don't have it together like these people. So we put a version of ourselves out there that just doesn't match reality. Now, the upside of that is that we're comfortable. The upside of that is that we're safe and that we can, you know, have conversations that feel like it's not getting too close to home. And it's really, really comfortable. The downside is that we're condemning ourselves if we do that. We're condemning ourselves to a dark place where nobody ever knows us and we can never really change. We're condemning ourselves to the darkness of status quo. Static. I'm always going to be who I've always been. Man, when are we really going to get real with each other? When is that going to happen? What will it take? What will it take to say, you know what, it's okay that I'm not enough because I know someone who is enough? What is it going to take? Well, I think it's going to take an incredible amount of relational risk. You're going to have to risk something. You're going to have to have a determination. You're going to have to really just push through that moment of, oh, I can't do this. I can't say this. And you're also going to have to have faith in a God who can actually change you, can break through the darkness of your static life, of your status quo life, and can actually change things. But when that happens, when we take the risk, when we actually get real, then everybody wins. Everybody you know wins when you get real. Not just people inside the church, but people in your family and people outside the church, because this is bigger than just, I need to let you guys know who I am. It's, I need everybody to know that the church doesn't have it all together, but we know someone who does. When we get real, it's more than just about building community. It's actually about delivering the gospel to people. It's about telling them the best thing they've ever heard, that you don't have to get your life together to come to church. You don't have to get your life together to come to Jesus. So that's what it's going to take. And the good news is that we have this compelling example in Scripture that we're going to take a look at today that helps us through the process of realizing that being not enough is not only something not to hide, it's actually something to shout about. We ought to get excited and shout about the fact that we don't have it all together. So his name is Bartimaeus, and his story is found in Mark chapter 10. So Bartimaeus is a guy who's just blind, and he's sitting on the side of the road. Now Jesus is entering into his last week of life. He's actually on his way to Jerusalem, and he's going through a city called Jericho. Maybe you've heard of Jericho. Jericho was an Old Testament city, and Joshua, you know, marched in, and they marched around Jericho, and then on the last day, they marched around Jericho 7 times, and they all shouted, and they blew horns, and what happened to the walls? The walls came tumbling down, right? So that's the city that Jesus is walking through. And he's actually exiting the city of Jericho, headed toward Jerusalem, and he's headed toward the crucifixion. That's what's going on with Jesus. And often as Jesus would walk around, huge crowds would follow him. And now rabbis in that day would often not just sit down and talk. They would actually walk and talk, and his disciples would follow along, and he would bring up things that he would see, and he would make a spiritual application. And so probably what's happening here as he's walking and talking is it's kind of like a Bible study. And Bart, that's what we'll call him, Bartimaeus, Bart hears the crowd. He can't see him because Bart's blind. So he's sitting in the dust, his status quo life, day after day, begging. And he hears this huge crowd and this huge commotion. And he hears the name Jesus. Someone tells him, you know, this is Jesus. Jesus is coming through, Jesus of Nazareth. And everybody had heard his words. So this is what happened. Mark chapter 10, we're starting in verse 46. They reached Jericho, and as Jesus and his disciples left town, a large crowd followed him. And a blind beggar named Bartimaeus was sitting beside the road. So there's the setting. Bartimaeus means son of Timaeus. And the word Timaeus means honor. a son of honor. He didn't look like he was a son of honor, sitting there begging. And beggars didn't, you know, beggars just sat there. They didn't even make eye contact with people because it was so humiliating to be a beggar. So they would just hold out their hands or hold out a cup. And that's what he did all day, every day. Now, this huge crowd was following Jesus, and all of them did this with various motives. I mean, some of them were curious. Some of them, you know, had heard about his miracles. They had heard about the things, cool things that he had done. Maybe some of them had heard about the meal that he provided for 5,000. They were just there for the food, you know? Large crowd following him. And this beggar is beside the road. When Bartimaeus heard that Jesus of Nazareth was nearby, he began to shout. Get the picture here. Here's a guy that never shouts. Here's a guy that hardly ever even meets anybody's eyes. He just holds out the cup or holds out his hands and doesn't look up. It's humiliating to be a beggar. And so he's just saying, alms, or could you help, or please help, over and over again all day long. But when he hears that Jesus of Nazareth is nearby, everything changes for him. He starts to shout. What does he shout? Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me. Jesus, Son of David. Interesting choice of words. He's saying, you're the king. You're the Son of David. See, God promised that David and his lineage was always going to be on the throne. So Bart has heard of him and he says, you're my king. I'm claiming you as my ruler. Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me. Now, have mercy on me was a very common cry for help in the Bible. People would often go to God and they would say, God, you're all powerful. And I'm so wicked and I'm so ugly. Could you have mercy on me? And so that's what Bart's crying. He was just being real. He was just opening up. He didn't care what everyone else thought. He shouted in the middle of the crowd. His dark and broken status quo was completely unacceptable to him. He couldn't have that anymore. See, authenticity is never passive. You don't just sit there and be authentic. You can't just sit authentically, you know? It's active. You have to go out there and be a little uncomfortable, and that's what Bart did. It was already humiliating to be a beggar, so shouting isn't something that most of them did. They just hoped to fade into the background of the culture, get a few coins, ignoring their core need, and that's like us. When we're in the context of life groups, when they're in that environment, and we're at church, instead of going to our core need, what we really actually need, we're content to just get a few coins. You know what? My really big problem is that I just don't witness enough to people. That's my core problem. Or I guess I need to, you know, I go to church 85% of the time and I need to get that up to 95% of the time. And we, just like him, want to fade into the background. We don't want to go to what's really going on with us. And we just say, you know, just a little bit. We don't make eye contact. No one ever actually gets to know who we are. Well, Bart wasn't going to have that. He wasn't. He knew that there was something bigger. See, we're content to go with those little things, but our lust and our greed and our pride, we just put them on the back. We don't talk about those. Because we all deal with sin, lust, greed, and pride. And if you're here and you're saying, I don't know, I don't deal with sin. Well, pride is yours then. That's your sin. You better own it. That's you. So, ironically, knowing that you're not enough to deal with those big things, it actually frees you up to do what Bart did, to shout it out and to say, I don't care what everyone thinks. Here's my issue. Here's my struggle, not just my sin. Here's what's going on in my life. Here's how life has sucker punched me. Because Bart's wasn't necessarily about sin. It was just, this is what's really going on with me. This is what really is hurting me. And so how did the crowd react to that? Be quiet, many of the people yelled at him. So what's going on? Are these his disciples? Are these Jesus' followers? Yes. And they're the ones who are saying, shh, stop it. Stop. Now, what's going on with these people? What? Why are they saying, stop shouting? I think it's because of this. I think he's messing up their Bible study. Jesus is teaching and preaching. It's like, we're hearing some really cool Jesus stuff, and you're messing this up. We want to hear from Jesus. this is such a cool Bible study. And we all feel like, oh, that's a great insight, Jesus. I'm going to write that down. And you're coming here with your brokenness and your neediness. Stop it. See, that's the way sometimes church feels to people with real struggles, with real issues, things that really need to be talked about. And it makes, you know who it makes uncomfortable? It makes church people uncomfortable. You know why it makes church people uncomfortable? It's not because they're pure. It's because it reminds them of their own brokenness. And it's uncomfortable to be reminded that I'm broken too. It brings up what's going on inside of me. So there are always going to be people in your life. There's always going to be people in your life group or in your church or your close friends that are going to be uncomfortable at first with your brokenness, because it reminds them of theirs. So they pressure you to be silent. See, Pastor Matt Brown of Sandals Church says it this way: the number one reason that people aren't real in church is because we aren't ready to receive real. We just can't, that's too close to home for me. That's just not something that I want to deal with right now. Or as Colonel Nathan Jessup says it, you can't handle the truth. I'm pretty good. So anyway, let's move on. So did it work? Did the hush crowd work on Bartimaeus? No, he only shouted louder. Son of David, he's sticking with the king. Son of David, have mercy on me. You're my king. You've got all power. Have mercy on me. He keeps on shouting. The guy knew that he was hopeless and helpless. This was his one shot. He didn't care who else knew it. See, when you realize that everything you've tried has failed, when you realize that you've come to the absolute end of yourself and you're not the source, then you don't care who knows it. This is what AA calls rock bottom. This is what, those recovery groups call that moment when you go, oh, I don't have it. Whatever it is, I don't have it. There's got to be a source outside of me because I am just good at messing things up. So Bart is there. He's like, he doesn't care. Now, so the crowd's saying, shut up, man, shut up. And he's saying, no, I'm going to crank this up to 11. And he keeps on shouting. When Jesus heard him, he stopped and said, tell him to come here. Jesus heard him. There had to be a huge crowd. One voice above the rest, Son of David, have mercy on me. And Jesus stops. You guys know, and I know when I was a kid and people told me that God hears my prayers, I thought, but there's billions of prayers. How does God do this? Jesus, even when all the odds were against him hearing this one guy, he heard the cry of faith. Son of David, have mercy on me. Tell him to come here. So they called to the blind man. Cheer up, they said. Come on, he's calling you. Now, who are these guys? Aren't these the same people that just told him to shut up? That's just like church people. It's like, oh, Jesus is on board. Okay, well, come on. Let's do this. What a show of Jesus' authority. They went from dismissive to attentive in one moment. And Bart threw aside his coat, jumped up, and came to Jesus. He threw aside anything that was going to trip him up, and he ran to Christ. This is the moment of truth, and we all have them. Maybe you're reaching a moment of truth in your own life. Bart was not going to miss his moment of truth. Getting real is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity that you can't pass up. If you do, you're going to find yourself sitting in the dust in your status quo of darkness, the same way you've always been for the rest of your life. The same blindness that has always cursed you is always going to curse you if you don't make some sort of move. Because authenticity is not passive, it's active. So he runs to Jesus, and Jesus says, what do you want me to do for you? What do you want, Bart? And I know it seems obvious because Bart is blind, but it's not that obvious. See, Jesus knows that some people who run up to him, don't have the faith to think that he could actually meet their real need, so they come up with a need that they think he can meet. So it wasn't necessarily a given that that Bart was going to say, I'm blind. There's a lot riding on the answer to this question. Bart's answer will reveal what he believes about Jesus and what he thinks about himself. This is a tension-filled question that I actually think Jesus is asking all of us. In fact, think about that for a second. Jesus is here, standing on this platform. He's looking you in the eye, and he's saying, what do you want me to do for you? Do you believe that Jesus actually would ask that question of you? What do you want me to do for you? Seems obvious, but Jesus is not going to jump to conclusions. He knows that sometimes, even though we know our own need all too well, we're slow to believe that he can meet it. It's like a person who gets the offer of a blank check from Warren Buffett and fills it out for $100 and goes, I hope he can cover this. We shrink God down to the perfect size for our little small issues, but the big stuff, well, God, I got that. The big stuff, I'll handle myself. The big stuff, I can do it. Not Bart. Bart was bold. That's what he said. My rabbi, my teacher, the blind man said, I want to see. That's my thing. I want to see. Do you realize how much faith it took to admit what he really wanted? Because the whole culture, our whole culture is about, I'm doing okay. You know, I'm doing all right. We don't want to admit want because it means that we lack. It means that we're not enough. I know it seems like it would be easy to say to Jesus, I want to see. But when something limits you, it's really hard to admit. It's hard to say, I'm not okay. It's hard for Bart to say things like, I'm not okay with no more sunsets. I'm not okay with never seeing my father's face again. I'm not okay with no more colors. I'm not okay with begging. Jesus, can you fix this? Jesus, I'm not okay. I'm not enough. Can you fix it? And there's the moment of tension, that moment between faith and reality where everything feels like it could go either way. And Jesus said to him, go, for your faith has healed you. And that word healed right there is a word that we get salvation from. In other words, your faith did more for you than restore your sight. It actually opened up your heart to who I am. Your faith in me, you called me king. You called me teacher. You understand who I am. Your faith has saved you. Instantly, the man could see. And by the way, what did Jesus tell him to do? Go. Let's say that together. Go. And what did the guy do? Nope, he followed. He stayed. He's like, you healed me. Okay, I'm going to follow you. And he followed Jesus down the road. Now, where was Jesus going? He was going to Jerusalem. Bart doesn't go. He stays and he follows. And if he followed all the way to Jerusalem, the first major event that Bart is ever going to see is the man who healed him get nailed on a tree. One of the first major events that Bart was going to see was his Messiah dying for him. Bart learned something that day that I think all of us can learn. He wasn't enough, and that was okay. Not enough is okay because Jesus is enough for you and for me. I don't know your story. I don't know what you've done in your life. And I know we've all got that imposter syndrome that if anybody ever figured out who we really were, they wouldn't even be our friends. But that's okay because all of us have that because Jesus is enough. We're not enough. That's the message of the church. You can't do enough. You can't know enough. You can't be good enough. You're not enough. But Jesus is enough. If I continue to smoke screen you into thinking that I've got it all together, then I steal the spotlight from Jesus. See, what Bart did, instead of drawing the attention to himself, which the crowd kind of wanted it there for a second, they kind of made him the center of attention. Bart didn't want to be the center of attention. He wanted to call the attention to Christ, the one who could meet needs. When you admit, I'm not enough, you're not calling attention to yourself. Except for the arrogant people who don't think they've got issues. No, you're calling attention to the one who can meet your needs. This is more than about community. It's about evangelism. It's about spreading the good news that there is someone who is enough. Not enough is okay because Jesus is enough. So don't steal the spotlight from Christ by hiding how much you are not enough. Because every time you admit it, you shine the spotlight on him. It's evangelism. It creates an environment where those outside the church feel like they can come in. You're not enough shines the spotlight and focuses attention on Jesus, the one who is. Not enough is okay because Jesus is enough. So get up wherever you're at in your life. Get up from that place of status quo. Get up from that place of darkness. Get up from that place of addiction. And it might not even be a sin. Get up from that place of life just sucker punching you and you never letting anyone know because you don't want to be a whiner. You don't want to be a complainer. But you've taken that way too far to the point where nobody knows that you're hurting, that you're really, really broken on the inside, and you don't feel like you're enough, and you can't change it. So I'm going to give you three ways to kind of get up from where you're at, from the brokenness and darkness of your status quo, and get to the light. Number one, take a relational risk. There are some people in your life that you trust. You need to let them know who you really are. It will be scary, like jumping out of a plane scary, but you need to do it because sin and struggle always causes us to hide. And it started way back at the beginning with Adam and Eve. What's the first thing they did after they sinned? They hid. Because it's terrifying to come out of hiding. And maybe you felt that way. It's like it's going around the room in life group and you're like, oh, I can't. I'm just going to come up with something. Like I'm a shopaholic or something. It just won't be that bad of a deal. People may not be comfortable with you being real, but Jesus is. I've never heard someone talk about their woundedness. I've never heard someone talk about their sin. I've never heard someone talk about their struggle. And I thought, wow, I'm so superior to them. Every single time I've heard someone talk like that, my reaction, my gut reaction is, so I'm not the only one. That feels so it's so much like freedom. So take the risk. And at your next life group, call a timeout and say, this is who I really am. Get blind Bartimaeus real with people around you. Admit that you don't have it all together, that you're not fine, that you're not enough, because not enough is okay. Why? Because Jesus is enough. So take the relational risk. Admit your real need, not that surface need that you want to admit, not that thing that feels comfortable, but that thing that strikes at who you really are. Allow people you trust, not everybody. You don't have to broadcast who you really are to everybody, but allow people you trust to really know you, even in your weaknesses. If you had the chance that Bart had to answer the question, what do you want me to do for you? What would your answer be? That core question. It's a question that cuts to the core of who you are. It penetrates below the surface and hits the real you if you answer it honestly. And know that you're not alone. See, Christianity is not for those who have arrived. Christianity is for those of us who are on the journey, in the middle of the struggle. Paul David Tripp says it this way, thankfully, the gospel of Jesus Christ isn't for the strong, the righteous, the successful, but for weak, failing sinners like you and me. Isn't that good news? Isn't that incredible news? That you didn't have to get all cleaned up and washed up to come to Jesus, but it's set up for people just like you and me. So let's create, last thing, let's create a Me Too culture. Let's create a Me Too culture where when someone in your life group or in your relationships opens up and says, listen, this is something, this is ugly, I don't know if you can handle this, but blah, that's me. And you've got a temptation there to go, oh my, but let's change oh my in the Me Too. Or as my daughters say it, same. That's the way I say it. That's what the kids are saying that these days. Same. Or samesies, which I'm not comfortable with. So, same. Let's turn oh my into me too. See, church ought to be the safest place on earth to be who we really are. Let's create that. Let's create that kind of culture. Let's follow Christ in that. Church is a very safe place to meet a dangerous God who may just change everything for you. Model that consistently, that our hope is not in ourselves, but it's in Christ. Think what we could change. Think what could change in our culture If the church became a place where people who walked through the door didn't have to jump over a spiritual hurdle, didn't have to have some minimum requirements, just a safe place to be a blind beggar who's shouting out to anyone who will listen, I'm in need. I really need Christ. No pressure to heal yourself. There's no pressure to heal yourself in this church. There's no pressure to come up with some sort of strategy to make yourself better. Only the strategy that Christ gave us, which is, look at me. Fix your attention on me, abide in me, walk in the Spirit, get close to me, you draw near to me, I'll draw near to you. And through that process, you're going to end up looking like me, thinking like me, talking like me, a whole lot more than you are right now. As we risk authenticity, and as we admit our real needs, then we put the focus on Christ. The Christ who invites everybody in this room, no matter what your story is, to come into his presence. Even if you're an atheist, he invites you to come into his presence. The Christ who can handle all of your doubt and all of your sin and all of your struggle because you're not enough. You don't have it all together. The one who knows that we're not enough, and he knows that's okay because he is enough. Are you ready for that? Are you ready for that sort of freedom? Man, I hope you are. Because there's nothing like it. Not enough is okay, because Jesus is enough. Let's pray together.